his cabinet members on aspects of public policy. He'd watched his father's speeches over and over until he could write a perfectly crafted speech of his own. It wasn't until he was a teenager that he'd realized his father had speechwriters to do that for him. He had long ago determined that he would not let his birthright go unearned, that the history texts would not condemn him as an unworthy emperor. And while he may still have been plagued with doubts every single day, he knew, deep down, that he was doing his very best. And it had been a long, long time since he had met someone who wasn't impressed by that. It had also been a long, long time since he had cared. Tudor 8.6 model, said Cinder, reading off Nancy's panel. She looks to be in pristine condition. Kai opened his mouth to agree, but before he could, Cinder raised a fist and brought it hard against the side of Nancy's spherical head. Kai jumped in surprise. The android began to topple off the table, but Cinder caught her easily and set her back on her treads. She seemed almost sheepish when she said, "You'd be surprised how often that works." Kai laughed, a little awkwardly. He was no longer sure exactly who was trying to impress who, or if either of them were succeeding. "Are you sure you're Lynn Cinder, the mechanic?" A high-pitched voice interrupted them, along with the crunch of android treads on the street. "Cinder! I've got it!" Kai turned to see a servant android rolling toward them, its blue sensor light flashing excitedly. The android slammed a second robotic foot onto the table, its plating shiny and clean compared to the old one. "It's a huge improvement over the old one, only lightly used, and the wiring looks compatible as is. Plus, I was able to get the dealer down to just 600 univs." The mechanic grabbed the new foot and dropped it behind the table. "Good work, Aiko. Nuyen Shifu will be delighted to have a replacement foot for his escort droid." "Nuyen Shifu?" said the android. "I don't compute." With a nervous smile, Cinder tilted her head toward Kai. "Aiko, please pay your respects to our customer, His Imperial Highness." The android tilted back her bulbous head. Though androids didn't have genders, many personality chips were programmed to identify more male or female, and it was clear from the high voice that this was a she. It was an easy connection for Kai to make. After all, this Aiko had a similar body style to Nancy, who he'd always thought of as a she as well. The android sensor flashed as she scanned Kai's face. "Prince Kai," she said, her voice taking on the unexpected tinge of a sigh. "You are even more handsome in person." Kai laughed, a sudden, uncontrollable laugh that burst out of him before he could reel it back. "That's enough, Aiko," said Cinder. "Get in the booth." The android obeyed, ducking under the tablecloth. Still grinning, Kai leaned against the sturdy frame of the booth's rolling door. "You don't see a personality like that every day. Did you program her yourself?" Cinder started to smile too, and though it had a sardonic edge to it, Kai felt like he'd won something. Believe it or not, she came that way. "I suspect a programming error, which is probably why my stepmother got her so cheap."
"I do not have a programming error!"
Aiko's irate voice screeched from behind one of the towering shelves. Kai chuckled again. Cinder caught his eye for a brief moment before she looked away. Back at Nancy. The reason he was here. The oh-so-important reason. Why was he so distracted? He lowered the zipper on his sweatshirt a hair. The heat was becoming unbearable. His shirt would be drenched with sweat by the time he got back to the hover, and he was grateful that it hadn't yet seeped through the sweatshirt. "So, what do you think?" he asked. "I'll need to run her diagnostics. It will take me a few days, maybe a week." Cinder pushed a strand of hair behind one ear and lowered herself into a chair. Only then did Kai realize that she'd been trembling a little. Maybe she was dehydrated. He thought of offering to go get her some water, but then remembered that she had an android assistant to do those things for her. So instead, he held up his ID-implanted wrist and asked, "Do you need payment up front?" Cinder was waving away the suggestion almost before he'd finished. "No, thank you. It will be my honor." He opened his mouth to protest, but hesitated. This wasn't uncommon when he was dealing with small business owners. They seemed to think that his patronage was payment enough, or maybe the publicity that would be gained from it. Arguing over a payment generally led to the vendor feigning offense and him feeling like a braggart. He lowered his hand and shifted his attention to Nancy again. "I don't suppose there's any hope of having her done before the festival?" "I don't think that will be a problem," said Cinder, shutting Nancy's control panel. "But without knowing what's wrong with her..." "I know, I know." Kai hooked his thumbs on his sweatshirt pockets and rocked back on his heels. Ever since he'd started searching for Princess Celine, it had been his dream to announce her survival and imminent reclamation of her throne at the annual ball. It was, after all, a celebration of world peace. He could think of no greater gift to his country than ridding them of Queen Lavanna, their sneakiest and most deceitful enemy. "Just wishful thinking. How will I contact you when she's ready?"
"Send a comm to the palace." Kai paused, remembering Sybil Mira, the Lunar Queen's own minion. Remembering how important it was that she never suspect he was searching for the missing princess, or doing anything else to undermine Lavanna's rule. Quickly, he added, "Or will you be here again next weekend? I could stop by."
Aiko's voice chirped from the back.
"Oh yes, we're here every market day. You should come by again. That would be lovely."
Cinder winced. "You don't need to."
"It'll be my pleasure."
It wasn't a lie. Not only would this allow for him to keep the transaction discreet, but it also meant that he would be picking up Nancy in person, rather than having her dropped off with some nameless assistant at the palace. It meant he was sure to see Lynn Cinder again. Maybe he could learn more about her then. Maybe he'd make her smile. A real smile. Maybe he needed another hobby. He nodded a farewell to her. She returned the nod, but didn't stand or bow. All professional politeness, without much of the royal courtesy he was used to. It was sort of refreshing. Pulling the hood over his face again, he turned and slipped back into the bustling crowd. He felt lighter than he had in days as he made his way back to the hover car. He knew that nothing was resolved, not yet. His father was still dying, his country was still in danger, and Nancy was still unable to share her secrets. But there was something about Lynn Cinder, something capable and confident. Even if she had been a little nervous to be talking to him. There was something about her that went beyond an unexpected reputation. The knot in his chest loosened, just a little. Lynn Cinder was going to solve this problem. He knew it. She was going to fix Nancy. And then he would be able to retrieve the lost information about the princess. He would find Celine and... for the first time in generations, Earth would have a true ally in Luna. He was optimistic as he left the weekly market behind. More optimistic than he had been in weeks. That mechanic was going to change everything.
Something old, something new, or stars above. Cinder squeezed the suitcase shut with a sigh of finality. Aiko had been pestering her all week about what she was and wasn't going to pack, insisting on a variety of gowns and uncomfortable shoes and rolling her eyes at Cinder's constant reminders that they would be spending most of this trip on a farm with cows and chickens and mud.
"Just because you're not a queen anymore," Aiko said,
her hands fisted on her hips.
Does it mean you get to go back to looking like you just rolled out of an engine compartment?
Together, they had finally agreed on a few pairs of comfortable pants and lightweight blouses, plus a simple emerald green cocktail dress.
Just in case, Aiko had insisted.
Cinder stepped back and looked at the suitcase with some trepidation, trying to determine what she'd forgotten. But she knew the nerves writhing in her stomach had nothing to do with what she would wear, or the possibility of leaving something behind. After all, they had stores on Earth. No, she was nervous to be leaving. For the first time since her official abdication, she was leaving Luna. She had been back to Earth only once since she'd reclaimed her place upon the lunar throne. She had kept to her promise and been Kai's date to the Commonwealth's ball last year. And it had been terrifying, but also extraordinary. The people of Earth still weren't sure what to do with the fact that one of their beloved leaders was not so secretly dating a lunar, and a cyborg lunar at that. There had been protests. There had been countless comedy skits taking jabs at a romance that most of the world deemed unconventional, even offensive. There had been jealous, hateful glares from the other guests, and live news feeds that criticized everything from Cinder's gown to her posture to her sarcastic, i.e., impolite, sense of humor. She would have been humiliated, or possibly furious, if it hadn't also been for the amazing things that had come from that trip. Aiko had been one of the stars of the ball, the first android to ever receive an official invitation. Dozens of kids had asked Cinder to autograph their port screens, calling her a role model and a hero. Then, there had been her elation at seeing her friends again. There had been all the Earthens who weren't against her. In fact, her critics were in the minority, at least according to Aiko's frequent updates and reminders. There were plenty of people who defended her against the outcry, reminding the world that she was the girl who had saved them from Levana and done nothing but show loyalty to Earth and display bravery worth commending. And of course, there was Kai. The way he had looked at her when she first stepped off the spaceship and onto the platform at New Beijing Palace had been encapsulated in her memory. She had long felt a homesickness for Earth, despite how hard she'd fought to rescue the country she knew so little about. Luna had never felt like home, not even after 2 years of living here. She'd thought she was homesick for New Beijing, even though her life with Audrey hadn't felt like much of a home either. It wasn't until that moment, seeing Kai smile and being wrapped up in his arms, both of them ignoring the fact that the world was watching, that she realized he was the home she'd been missing. In the months since then, relations with Earth had grown stronger, and it seemed the Eastern Commonwealth citizens were gradually coming to terms with their emperor's unusual romantic choice. Cinder's abdication hadn't hurt. From the moment she'd announced her plan to dissolve the lunar monarchy and host elections for a democratic ruling system, the people of Earth had rejoiced. To them, it was the ultimate political statement, the promise that there would never again be a Queen Levana. Lunars hadn't been quite as enthusiastic about her choice, but once nominations ensued and election campaigns were underway, the mindset of the country shifted. There was a potential to this system that hadn't been there under royal rule. Everyone would be represented, and any of their children could grow up to be a leader. It was a new way of thinking, especially for those in the outer sectors, and Cinder had been immensely relieved when her plan gained traction. When the ballots were released, almost every single citizen had cast a vote. She had never been so proud of an accomplishment, not even the revolution that had ended Levana's reign. A knock thumped at her door, and Aiko entered, bouncing like a kangaroo.
"They're here! I just got the comm from port security! The Rampian has arrived!"
"Good," said Cinder, with a firm nod at her suitcase. "I'm ready to go." Aiko paused and took in the suitcase with a disbelieving frown.
"Is that all you're bringing?"
"That's it. Why? How many suitcases are you bringing?
3, and that was after I pared it down.
She placed a hand on Cinder's arm.
Don't worry, if you run out of clothes, I'll lend you some of mine. Kenny!
Aiko glanced back.
Would you be a dear and take Ambassador's luggage down to the docks?
Cinder followed her look. Liam Kinney was hovering in the doorway, arms folded over his chest. Kinney had been one of the royal guards who had sided with Cinder during the revolution, and she'd come to consider him a friend since then. He was no longer a royal guard. There wasn't any royalty to protect. But he had been keen to take the position of protecting the new Grand Minister and his parliament of elected representatives, and Cinder had been happy to recommend him.
With pleasure, Kinney deadpanned. In fact, I was hoping that if I came to see you off, I would be asked to do manual labor.
Aiko shrugged.
If you don't want to do any heavy lifting, then stop having such impressive muscles.
Cinder stifled a laugh as Kinney stepped forward to haul the suitcase off her bed. Though he was pretending to scowl, she could detect redness around his ears.
At least yours is about half the weight of Aiko's, he said, casting Cinder a grateful look.
I had only your comfort in mind, said Cinder. Thanks, Kinney. He gave her a bow, a habit that had been impossible to break him of.
My shift starts in an hour, so I won't be at the dock to say goodbye, but I wanted to wish you both safe travels.
Try to keep that new Grand Minister out of trouble while I'm gone.
I'll do my best.
He headed back for the door, and a smile so quick and secretive passed between him and Aiko that Cinder almost missed it. Aiko didn't take her gaze from him until he was gone.
He could have come with us, you know,
said Cinder, glancing around the room one last time. Aiko shook her head.
He has a painfully strong work ethic. It's one of his more annoying characteristics.
Cinder chuckled. Well, nobody's perfect.
Speak for yourself.
Aiko spun back to her and clapped her hands excitedly.
Are you ready? Can we go?
Cinder sucked in another breath.
Yes, I think so.
She frowned.
You don't think it's a mistake to leave, do you?
Mistake?
It's just, the new parliament only took office 6 weeks ago. What if something goes wrong? What if they need me?
Then they can send you a comm.
Aiko settled her hands on Cinder's shoulders.
You're an Earthen ambassador now, Cinder. So it's time you got yourself to Earth and started doing some ambassadorizing.
Cinder cocked her head to one side.
That's not a word.
It should be. Besides, the Grand Minister has had more assistance and transition into his gig than you had when you took the throne. He'll be fine.
She locked her elbows with Cinder's and dragged her toward the door.
Now come on! Paris awaits!
We're not going to Paris.
It's close enough for me.
Cinder set aside her resistance as she and Aiko made their way through the palace-turned government headquarters. The white marble, the towering glass windows, the sea of stars and the black sky beyond. She couldn't decide if she was sad or thrilled to be leaving. Aiko kept up enough enthusiastic chatter that her worries began to calm. And she was right. Though Cinder had been heavily involved in the transition to the new governmental system, advising the elected leaders as much as she could once they'd taken office, her role was already becoming moot. It had been decided early on that she would continue to be involved in lunar politics, but as an Earthen ambassador, like Winter. She was in a unique position to continue smoothing the relations between Earth and Luna, after all, and Kai. She was desperate to see Kai again, to kiss him, to be in his arms, to laugh at his ironic jokes and watch his eyes crinkle when he laughed at hers. It was easy for Cinder to justify the desperation because, unromantic as it may have been, she knew that together, she and Kai had the power to do more for the prejudices between their people than any amount of political discussions could hope to accomplish. When she and Aiko entered the spaceship docks that were located beneath the palace, the Rambian was the first thing she saw. It was enormous compared to most of the small royal podships lined up in neat rows. Its metal plating was beat up and dingy,
its cargo-toting body almost cumbersome when compared to the sleek designs that surrounded it. But it was beautiful, and its lowered cargo ramp was more welcoming than any red carpet. Thorn and Cress were waiting for them at the bottom of the ramp, and when Cress and Iko spotted each other, they shared a squeal. Thorn and Cinder shared a cringe, and then they were all smiling and embracing, as if they hadn't seen each other in years, even though they still got together with some regularity. Thorn and Cress's role in distributing the Letimosis antidote to Earth brought them to Artemisia often, and it was those intermittent moments of easy friendship that had helped to keep Cinder sane as she struggled to grasp the intricacies of lunar transportation systems, trade policies, and educational mandates. With his arms draped over Cinder's and Iko's shoulders, Thorn guided them back up the ramp.
"How does it feel to be a layperson again, Miss Lin?"
"Wonderful," she said. "I never want to hear the words Your Majesty ever again."
"Never? Never ever?"
Thorn quirked an eyebrow at her.
"What if there was an Imperial thrown in between them? Would that change your mind?"
Cinder clenched her jaw, glad that his teasing couldn't rile a blush from her. With a sharp elbow jab to his side, she extricated herself from beneath his arm. "How's the ship been holding up?"
"Nice dodge," said Thorn, dropping his other arm from Iko and hooking a thumb over his belt. "But as your question is pertinent, I'll allow it. There's actually been a rattle in the compression system for the past month or so."
Cinder glanced up at the ceiling of the cargo bay, even though she couldn't hear anything with the systems powered down.
"I told him to take it to a mechanic when we were in Dublin last week," said Cress.
"And I told her that I already have a mechanic," said Thorn, pointing at Cinder.
Cress shrugged apologetically.
"It's fine," said Cinder. "I kind of miss the work, actually. I'll check it out when we're in the air."
Thorn clapped his hands.
"Great. Then let's get this diplomatic envoy started. Ship, raise the ramp. You all just sit back and relax, and we'll be on Earth in no time."
He turned to head for the cockpit, adding over his shoulder,
"I've been practicing takeoffs, by the way. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised."
As soon as he was out of earshot, Cress turned back to Iko and Cinder with a grimace.
"He hasn't really gotten any better," she whispered. "Let's go back to the crew quarters. There's more to hold on to back there."
Cress took the lead, walking the narrow corridor of the Rampian with the air of a hostess welcoming important guests into her home. Cinder grinned at her back, thinking of what a change it was from the first time Cress had been aboard the Rampian. All meek and awkward and barely able to say more than two words without hiding behind Thorn. She took them to one of the small crew quarters, a room long left empty. In fact, as Cress was opening the door, it occurred to Cinder that this had been her room for the brief time she'd sought sanctuary on the ship. She stepped inside with a sense of nostalgic awe and promptly began to laugh. The room was full of white crepe paper and tulle, unburned candles and glass lanterns, streamers and small silk bags overflowing with sugared almonds. Iko gasped and trailed a finger over an enormous tulle bow.
"Is this all for the wedding?"
Cress nodded, but her expression was worried as she looked around at the scattered decorations.
"Wolf told us to bring whatever we thought might be needed, so we stopped at a wedding supply store in the Republic and just about cleared out their stock."
Chewing on her lower lip, she glanced back at Iko.
"Once we got it all piled in here, though, I started to wonder if it was maybe all a bit on the gaudy side."
Iko shrugged.
"We can work with gaudy."
The Rampian began to rumble. Cress and Iko each took a spot on the lower bunk bed that took up one wall of the cabin, but Cinder made her way through the jumble of rose petal stuffed baskets and empty glass vases and stacked ivory linens until she came to the round window at the back of the room. Cress was right. Thorn's takeoffs were still horrendous. But Cinder didn't move away from that window until the white city of Artemisia was nothing but a glint of light on the moon's cratered surface. The landing was better. Maybe because Cinder was so entertained by Aiko's bubbling monologue about European wedding traditions that she hardly noticed the rocks and sways of the ship. While in space, she had fixed the loose fitting that had caused the rattle and spent the rest of the long flight catching up with Thorn and Cress, learning of all the sightseeing and adventures they had had in between antidote runs. Thorn, it seemed, had made it a personal goal to ensure that Cress got to see and experience everything she'd ever dreamed of seeing and experiencing. And it was a personal goal he was taking seriously. Cress didn't seem to be complaining, though it was clear from the way they leaned into each other that it was his company, more than the museums and monuments, that really mattered to her.
"How often have you been to visit Wolf and Scarlet?"
Aiko asked, kicking her feet against a storage crate in the cargo bay as Thorn powered down the ship's engines.
"A few times a year," said Cress. "Scarlet finally built us a landing pad beside the hangar so Thorn would stop flattening her crops."
She glanced toward the cockpit.
"I hope he didn't miss it."
They could hear Thorn's growl from the cockpit.
"I didn't miss it!"
The ramp roared and creaked as it began to lower, and Cinder stood and approached it, surprised at how her heart started to thunder. First, there was the sky, a strip of impossible blue along the ramp's edge. Then, her first full breath of air. Air that came from trees and plants, not a recycling tank. And it was coupled with the aroma of fresh-churned earth and sweet hay and not-so-sweet animals. There were so many noises, too, distantly familiar. Birds chirping, chickens clucking, a breeze whistling through the opening the ramp had created. And also, voices. A cacophony of voices. Too many voices. It wasn't until the ramp was halfway lowered that Cinder saw them. Not Wolf and Scarlet and their friends, but journalists.
"It's her, Celine, Your Majesty!"
Cinder took a step back and felt her serenity slough away, leaving behind the same tension she'd lived with for 2 long years. That feeling of being in the spotlight, of having responsibilities, of needing to meet expectations.
"Why did you abdicate the throne?"
someone yelled, and another,
"How does it feel to be back on Earth?"
And,
"Will you attend the Commonwealth Ball again this year?"
And,
"Is the upcoming Lunar Earthen wedding a political statement? Do you want to say anything about the Union?"
A loud gunshot blared across the gravel driveway. The journalists screamed and dispersed, some cowering behind the Rampian's landing gear, others rushing back to the safety of their own hovers.
"I'll give you a statement,"
said Scarlet, reloading the shotgun in her arms as she marched toward them. She sent a piercing glare at the journalists who dared to peek out at her.
"And the statement is, leave my guests alone, you pitiful, news-starved vultures!"
With a frustrated huff, she looked up at Cinder, who had been joined by the others at the top of the ramp. Scarlet looked much the same as Cinder remembered her, only more frenzied. Her eyes had an annoyed, bewildered look to them as she gestured haplessly at the farmland behind her.
"Welcome to France. Let's get you inside before they send out the android journalists. They're not as easy to scare off."
Scarlet released a groan as she shut the front door behind Cinder, Aiko, Cress, and Thorn.
"They started showing up 2 weeks ago," she said. "They tried camping out in the sugar beet field like they owned the place. I've had to call the police 4 times for trespassing, but honestly, I think the police are about as dumbfounded by all this media attention as I am."
She sighed and slumped against the door.
"I wanted a quiet, intimate wedding, not a circus."
Thorn leaned against the staircase rail. "It's the first known lunar earthen wedding in generations. The groom is a bioengineered wolf-human hybrid. And you invited the Emperor of the Eastern Commonwealth and an ex-lunar queen. What did you expect?"
Scarlet glared at him.
"I am marrying the man that I love, and I invited my friends to celebrate with us. I expected a little bit of privacy."
"I'm sorry," said Cinder. We should have tried to be more discreet with our plans.
Scarlet shook her head. It's not your fault. Kai's travel schedule is pretty much public knowledge, so there was no stopping this, I'm afraid. She snorted.
Just be glad you weren't here to see the horde of screaming girls when he arrived.
Cinder stood straighter.
He's here already?
Scarlet nodded.
He arrived last night. Winter and Jason this morning. Everyone's here now, so I just need to survive the next 3 days of chaos until the wedding, and then it will be over.
She massaged her brow.
At least, that's assuming the blood-sucking heathens out there don't try to crash the ceremony. You know, the worst part of it is that they keep trying to make this out to be some big political statement. Earth and Luna united at last. Earth and girl tortured by Levana agrees to marry Lunar soldier. It's revolting, she sighed before adding.
He's not here, Cinder.
Cinder snapped her attention back to Scarlet, realizing she'd been ignoring most of her diatribe while she peered through the doorways into the kitchen and sitting room and tried to listen for footsteps coming from the floor above.
What?
Aiko tittered, but Scarlet buried her annoyance with an understanding smirk.
Wolf took them for a tour of the farm. They'll be back soon.
Right. Sorry, I wasn't...
Scarlet waved her away.
It's fine. Besides, if anyone understands what it's like for their relationship to be treated like a political stunt, it's you.
Cinder lowered her eyes, not sure if that was meant to make her feel better.
Hey, Cinder,
Thorne said, pacing to the opening that separated the entryway from a humble sitting room.
Remember when we were here before? When we were just two crazy fugitives on the run from the law?
You mean when we discovered the secret lair under the hangar where I'd been kept comatose for 8 years of my life, then turned into a cyborg by some mystery surgeon before being given away to a family who didn't really want me? Yeah, Thorne. Those were the good old days.
Thorne winked. I was actually referring to that cute blonde who found us and nearly had a heart attack.
Hey, is she going to be at the wedding?
Her name is Emily, said Scarlet. And yes, she is. Please try not to flirt with her in front of your girlfriend. I have enough drama to deal with this week as it is.
Kress shrugged. It doesn't really faze me much anymore. Besides, he probably already told her he loved her, so what else can he say?
Thorne cast his gaze to the ceiling and thought.
It's true. I might have. I honestly don't remember.
Kress rolled her eyes, but if she was harboring any resentment, Cinder couldn't detect it. She opted not to tell them that Thorne had, in fact, claimed love at first sight when Emily had fainted at the farmhouse's front door. Hinges squeaked from the back of the house, followed by thumping footsteps and Winter's dreamy voice flowing through the house's narrow halls.
But I will have a chance to milk her before we go. I've never milked a cow before. I think I'd be good at it.
Of course you would, said Jason with a chuckle. She'll just stare at you dumbfounded the whole time like all the other animals that fall under your spell.
What spell?
Said Winter, knocking her shoulder into Jason as they rounded the base of the stairway.
I'm not a hypnotist.
Are you sure?
They froze when they spotted everyone in the foyer.
You made it!
Cried Winter. She flung herself at Cinder, giving her a brief squeeze before embracing Thorne, Kress, and Aiko in turn. Wolf had come in with them too, showing a full row of sharp teeth as he grinned at the new arrivals. And beside him?
I told them that it was the dulcet roar of the Rampian's engines, said Kai, but they all insisted it was just another media hover flying over.
His hands were tucked into his pockets, and he was dressed more casually than Cinder was used to seeing him. A cotton button-down shirt with the sleeves rolled to his forearms and dark denim jeans. She had never imagined that farm life might suit him, but he looked as comfortable here as he did anywhere. Cinder crossed her arms over her chest.
You're an expert on the sound levels of spaceships now, are you?
Nah, said Kai. I've just been waiting to hear that sound all day.
She smiled at him, feeling the hummingbird flutter of her own pulse. He smiled back.
Aces, said Thorne with a low groan.
They haven't even kissed yet, and they're already making me nauseous.
His comment was followed by a pained grunt, but Cinder didn't know which of her friends had smacked him. Kai rolled his eyes, then grabbed Cinder's hand and yanked her toward the back hallway. It was only a few steps. Not even a wall or a door separated them from the others. But within moments, it felt like they were alone. Covertly, blissfully alone.
"How was the flight?"
Kai whispered, standing so close she imagined she could feel the vibrations of his heartbeat in the air between them.
"Oh, you know," Cinder murmured back. "Thorn was flying, so it was a constant stream of near-death experiences. How's Emperor life?"
"Oh, you know, press conferences, cabinet meetings, adoring fans everywhere I go."
"So, also a constant stream of near-death experiences?"
"Pretty much."
He'd inched closer to her as they talked. Cinder was nearly pressed against the wall, standing between a wall peg holding heavy overalls and a stack of muddy boots on the floor.
"Is that an acceptable amount of small talk?"
"Acceptable to me," said Cinder, digging her hands into his hair and pulling him to her.
Breakfast served in 20 minutes. Cinder grumbled under her breath at the message scrolling across the darkness of her eyelids. She squeaked her eyes open and peered into the dim sunlight that filtered through the room's tiny window. The familiarity of the Rampian surrounded her, a far cry from the luxury of Artemisia Palace, yet more comfortable to her even now. The gurgle of a water tank through the metal walls, the aromas of steel and recirculating air, the too firm mattress on the bunk bed's lower cot. However, the sensation of an arm thrown over her waist was something new. She smiled and shut her eyes again, ushering Scarlet's calm away. She and Kai had stayed up far too late. Rays of sunlight were appearing on the horizon when they'd finally fallen asleep. They'd wandered the endless crops, their hands interlaced, content that all the journalists had finally gone to bed. They'd sat on the stoop of the farmhouse, staring up at the moon in a near cloudless sky. They'd ended up in the crew quarters that Kai had slept in during his stint aboard the ship, cuddled on the lower bed and talking. Talking, until the words had turned gummy in their mouths and their eyelids had been too heavy to keep open. It was almost like they'd never been separated at all, and Cinder couldn't help feeling relieved to know that his presence was as reassuring to her now as it ever had been. She felt like she could tell him anything, and judging from the fears and pet peeves and frustrations he'd shared with her, she sensed he felt the same way. With a heavy sigh, she eased onto her back. Kai groaned in protest and shifted his weight to press his face into the pillow beside her head.
"Scarlet's making breakfast," she told him.
Her voice was scratchy from the hours of talking and laughing.
"Time is it?"
Kai mumbled into the pillow. Cinder checked the clock in her head.
"Almost 9.
Kai groaned again. They couldn't have slept for more than 4 hours. She guessed that Wolf and Scarlet had been up since dawn, tending to the farm. They had probably just missed each other.
"Come on," she said, reaching for Kai's arm. "It's a big day."
Kai jerked in protest when her metal hand touched him, and Cinder recoiled.
"Stars, that hand gets cold,"
Kai murmured. Rolling onto his back, he took the prosthetic hand in between both of his palms, warming it as he would warm icy fingers on a winter's day. Cinder sat up and looked down at him. His eyes were still closed. He could have fallen asleep again, but for his palms rubbing over her metal hand. His shirt was rumpled, his hair tousled against the sheets.
"Kai," he grunted in response. "I love you."
A sleepy smile curved across his mouth.
"I love you too."
"Good."
Leaning over, she kissed him fast. "Because I'm taking the shower first." The house was too small to accommodate them all, so while Winter and Jason had taken the one spare bedroom, the others had stayed aboard the Rampian, and they made their way across the drive together once they'd all showered and dressed. The journalists were out in force again, screaming their questions and snapping their pictures, but Wolf and Jason had erected a simple rope barrier the evening before and, for now at least, the journalists were content to stay behind it, rather than risk Scarlett's wrath. Cinder tried to ignore them, but their presence made her 100 times more aware of the warmth of Kai's hand pressing against her lower back. The house smelled of bacon and strong coffee when they entered. Jason was sitting at the round table in the kitchen, peeling apart a croissant, while Scarlet, Wolf, and Winter bustled around him in an assortment of patterned cooking aprons. Even Wolf had blue checkered fabric tied around his waist.
"Grab a plate," Scarlet ordered,
pointing at a stack of plates on the counter with a wooden spoon.
"We're going to eat in the sitting room. It's too crowded in here."
Cinder did as she was told, helping herself to a cinnamon pastry, some bacon, a casserole of potatoes, onions, and peppers, and a cluster of garnet purple grapes. Then she retreated to the sitting room, where Aiko was waiting with one leg thrown over the arm of a rocking chair. She sighed when Cinder sat on the floor beside her.
"I don't want to hear one word about how delicious that is," said Aiko.
"It's terrible," said Cinder, biting a piece of bacon in half. After swallowing, she added, "Especially the bacon. You would hate bacon."
The others filed in, taking over the sofa and nearly every available spot on the worn rug. Wolf and Scarlet came last.
"One of you had better be planning on making lunch," said Scarlet, untying her apron as she claimed the last spot on the sofa.
Wolf handed her a plate of food, then sat between her feet, draping one arm over her knee as he gobbled down his own food. Thorn lifted his fork.
"I'll make a run for takeout."
"Deal,"
said Scarlet, clinking the side of her fork against his. Aiko stopped rocking in her chair and leaned forward.
"So, tell us what's in store for your big day. Have you had fun planning it? What are you most excited about?"
Scarlet leaned her head against the sofa.
"I'm most excited for it to be over, and for all those stupid media people to leave so we can have our lives back."
Wolf petted her knee and kept eating. Cress frowned.
"Aren't you excited to be married?"
"Oh, sure," said Scarlet. "That part will be nice, but I never wanted to have a big wedding, and I certainly didn't expect it to turn into this jamboree."
She straightened again.
"Not that I'm regretting inviting you guys," she added, looking pointedly at Kai and Cinder, with an extra glance at Winter. "Obviously, I wanted you here. It's just..."
She heaved a big sigh.
"We understand," said Kai, picking apart the sections of an orange. "Having lived with paparazzi my whole life, I would never wish it on anyone."
"You don't really think they'll interrupt the ceremony, do you?"
asked Aiko. Scarlet shrugged.
"I hope they have more integrity than that. Although it is tradition for the bride and groom to walk to the ceremony through the streets of town and cut through ribbons that the children are supposed to have prepared for us, but I can't even fathom walking down my own driveway with those goons out there. So I don't know if that's going to happen."
Cinder cleared her throat.
"Is that tradition important to you?"
Scarlet scoffed.
"The only tradition that I care about is saying I do."
There was an almost visible sigh of relief around the room, and Cinder flinched. Sure, it would be obvious to Scarlet, but she was buttering a slice of bread and didn't seem to notice anything unusual. Kai caught Cinder's eyes and mimed wiping sweat from his brow. She buried a laugh.
"Tell us more," said Winter. "I know very little about your earthen customs, and it could come in useful for my role as cultural ambassador someday."
She cupped her cheek with her hand, nearly obscuring her scars.
"But mostly, I want to know what traditions Scarlet Benoit Kesley deems important."
"Oh, I don't know," said Scarlet. "We'll exchange rings and say some vows, but you do that on Luna too, don't you?"
Winter nodded.
"Will you carry a bouquet?"
"Probably. I thought I'd pick whatever looked good in the garden that day."
"Do you have a color scheme?"
asked Aiko. Scarlet hesitated.
White?
Will there be cake?
Asked Cress.
Scarlet grinned.
Of a sort. Emily is bringing croquembouche, which is a big stack of doughy pastry balls drizzled with caramel. Oh, it will be delicious.
I heard of a tradition, said Thorn, where the guests are supposed to make a bunch of raucous noise outside of the bridal chambers on the wedding night, until you give us candy and send us away.
Scarlet glared at him. Yeah, please don't do that.
How many people will be there? Asked Kai.
Another groan from Scarlet. The whole blasted town, from what I can tell. I'm not sure how that happened. I certainly didn't invite everybody. Small and intimate, I kept saying. Only close friends, I told them. But in a small town, I guess everyone just assumes that they fit under that umbrella. If it was up to me, it would just be the people in this room.
She paused.
Well, and Emily, because again, she's bringing the dessert.
Wolf stood up and began gathering everyone's empty plates to be returned to the kitchen. After he had gone, Aiko leaned forward and clapped her hands.
I know! Why don't you show us your dress? I'm dying to see it!
Scarlet cocked her head.
You can't wait 2 more days?
Absolutely not! Please!
With a careless shrug, Scarlet pulled herself to her feet.
Come on, it's upstairs.
She left the room, with Aiko close on her heels. Cinder made to follow, but hesitated, glancing around at the guys.
You can handle this? She asked.
Thorn saluted her.
No problem. Just distract her for as long as you can.
Wolf reappeared from his trip to the kitchen and settled an enormous hand on Cinder's shoulder, so heavy it made her jump in surprise.
Don't let her come down here without the something old, he whispered.
Something old?
He nodded. She'll explain. She didn't mention it before, but I know it's one of the traditions that is important to her.
Better hurry up, said Jason, nudging Winter, Cinder, and Cress toward the staircase. You're in our way, and evidently we have decorating to do.
He didn't try to hide his disgust at the idea, and Cinder snorted at the mental image of Jason decorating anything. She turned and hurried up to the second floor, but paused halfway up the staircase. Cress crashed into her, nearly knocking Cinder to her knees, but she grabbed the rail and steadied herself.
What is it?
Asked Cress.
Nothing, said Cinder, trying to shake off the wave of memories that was accosting her.
She had climbed these stairs once before, when she and Thorn had come to the farm searching for Michel Benoit, when they'd come searching for answers to Cinder's past.
It's just weird being here again, she said, as much to herself as to Cress and Winter. Being here and not feeling hunted or afraid.
She glanced back and shrugged.
It's a big difference from the last time I was here.
With a smile she hoped looked cavalier, she vaulted up the rest of the steps. The second floor held a small corridor and 3 doors, 2 of which were shut. The open door revealed a bedroom with blankets in disarray, sun-bleached curtains, and a large tuxedo hanging from a hook on one wall. Aiko was sitting on the must bed with her knees drawn up to her chest, watching as Scarlet wrestled with a garment bag. No sooner had Cinder and the others filed in than Scarlet spun toward them with a pronounced voila, and held up the dress for them to see. A mutual gasp arose from Aiko, Cress, and Winter, followed by a round of giddy oohs. Cinder couldn't help chuckle at the drama of it all. The dress was beautiful, though, and uniquely Scarlet. A simple white cotton dress with a sweetheart neckline accented with sheer fabric that continued to her neck and was finished with white piping. A full skirt that would hang just below Scarlet's knees. A bright red sash around the waist was tied in a simple bow, matching the red vest and bow tie of the tuxedo.
It's perfect, said Aiko,
scrambling off the bed to touch the dress. She ran her fingers adoringly over the sash and down the full gathering of the skirt.
Simple and lovely, just like you, Scarlet,
she sighed dreamily.
You have to try it on for us.
Scarlet waved away the suggestion.
You'll see it on me in a couple of days.
Oh, please,
gushed Cress, tucking her clasped hands under her chin. She was joined by pleading doe eyes from Aiko, but Scarlet just shook her head and made to put the dress back into the garment bag.
I don't want to risk spilling something on it, she said.
It's good luck,
Winter said suddenly, her eyes bright with mischief. Scarlet paused.
What's good luck?
On Luna,
said Winter, folding her hands as if she were reciting from a wedding etiquette guide.
It's considered good luck for the bride to don her dress for at least an hour for each of the 3 days leading up to the wedding. It symbolizes her commitment to the marriage, and, as your groom is lunar, I think we should follow some of his traditions, don't you?
An hour? Said Scarlet. That's really pushing it, don't you think?
Winter shrugged. With a drawn-out sigh, Scarlet said,
Fine, I'll go put it on. But I'm not going to stay in it for an hour. I still have chores to do.
She slipped out of the bedroom carrying the dress, and a moment later, they heard the click of the bathroom door in the hall.
I've never heard of that tradition before, said Cress. That's because I made it up, said Winter.
Aiko beamed at her.
Well done! Now, quick!
She hurried to the tuxedo and pulled it off the peg, passing it to Cress, who passed it to Cinder.
Get that down to Wolf before she comes back!
Cinder rushed it to the staircase and hissed. Within seconds, Kai appeared in the foyer below with a garland of ribbon and roses draped across his shoulders. Cinder smirked.
Having fun down there?
Surprisingly, I sort of am. Turns out Thorn has a weird knack for this wedding thing. He says it's because Cress has been poring over wedding feeds for the past few months, but I think he's secretly enjoying it.
Thorn's voice came booming from the sitting room.
Don't mock a guy for having good taste.
Here, give this to Wolf,
said Cinder, lowering the tuxedo to Kai. He flashed her a thumbs up before retreating. Hearing the click of a door, Cinder pivoted around to see Scarlet emerging from the bathroom, wearing the white dress.
I need someone to zip it up,
she said, pulling her curls over one shoulder and turning her back to Cinder.
We should let Winter do it, said Cinder, coaxing her back into the bedroom.
You know my tendency to leave grease stains on every pretty thing I touch.
The other girls were anxiously anticipating Scarlet's return, and her appearance brought on another chorus of swoons. Winter pulled up the zipper and Scarlet gave a half turn, letting the full skirt swish around her legs. It was the girliest thing Cinder had ever seen her do, and even Scarlet was beaming when she caught sight of herself in the full-length mirror in the corner.
Oh, Scarlet, Cress sighed. You're getting married. It's all like a dream.
I guess it sort of is,
Scarlet agreed, her cheeks flushing pink around her freckles. Aiko petted the edge of the bed.
Sit down and let me do your hair.
My hair? What are you going to do to my hair?
I'm not sure yet, which is why I need to practice for the big day.
With Scarlet's back turned, Aiko winked at Cinder, who alone knew that Aiko had been researching popular wedding styles and practicing on the palace maids for weeks. Scarlet groaned.
How long will this take?
Why, do you have somewhere else to be? Stop whining and sit down. Cinder, you have those hair accoutrements I told you to hold on to.
Oh, right. Cinder had forgotten all about the brush, clips, bobby pins, and curling iron that Aiko had ordered her to stash in the hollow compartment of her cyborg leg before they'd left Luna.
She sat down and pulled them out. Scarlet's jaw dropped.
You're frighteningly prepared, she said,
pushing a fingertip through the pile of bobby pins that Cinder set on the bed.
What if I told you I just wanted to wear my hair down like normal?
Then I would use my powers of persuasion to change your mind.
Aiko grabbed the sides of Scarlet's head and forced her to face forward.
Now hold still.
The others sat down to watch Aiko work. She'd just finished teasing the hair at the crown of Scarlet's head when Scarlet asked,
Why is Wolf's tuxedo missing?
Cinder traded looks with the others.
It,
We were...
Thorn came up and took it, interrupted Cress, when you were changing.
Scarlet frowned.
What for?
Because he wanted to...
Cress swallowed.
Compare it to his own tuxedo, to make sure they were, matching?
Her gaze darted to one side as she realized how implausible that sounded, even for Thorn.
She means, interrupted Cinder, that Thorn was concerned that he and Wolf might have purchased the same tuxedo, which I guess is considered a big faux pas. You know how Thorn is about that sort of thing. Can't be seen in the same tux as the groom. How embarrassing, right?
Scarlet opened her mouth to speak again, her brow furrowed, when Aiko asked,
What shoes are you going to wear?
Scarlet moved to turn her head, but Aiko grabbed it and faced her forward again. She huffed.
I don't know. Winter said she had a pair I could borrow.
Winter snapped and hopped to her feet.
Right, they're still packed away. I'll go get them.
She darted across the hall into the guest room, rustling around for a moment. Then returned, carrying a pair of red heels, almost the exact color of the dress's sash. The appearance of the perfect shoes were met with another round of ahs, and this time, Cinder couldn't contain a chuckle and shake of her head. Winter sat cross-legged in front of Scarlet and pushed the shoes onto her feet.
How do they feel?
Not bad. Scarlet turned her ankle back and forth. If I can keep from tripping and breaking an ankle in them, this wedding will be a smashing success.
Aiko snorted.
They're barely a 2-inch heel.
Which is 2 inches taller than I'm used to.
A crash from downstairs made them all jump.
What was...
Scarlet started to push herself off the bed, but Aiko held firm to a lock of hair and tugged her back down.
What part of hold still don't you understand?
She scolded.
I'll go see what it was, said Cinder, slipping into the hallway and darting down the stairs.
Jason was sitting at the bottom, hunched over something and working intently.
That was Thorn, he said, without glancing up at her. What did he do, knock down a wall?
Cinder stepped past Jason, but hesitated when she saw the vase of white flowers on the floor at his feet. He was meticulously pulling the flowers out of the water, one by one, and wiring their stems together. His brow was knotted in concentration.
Are you making a bouquet? She asked incredulously.
Shut up.
He held the cluster in one hand and turned it a few different directions before plucking out a white hydrangea and adding it to the mix. Shaking her head, Cinder turned away and glanced into the sitting room. It was already transformed. Flowers and garlands and tulle bows draped over every surface. It was beautiful, if also a bit chaotic. Wolf was nowhere to be seen, probably changing, she thought. But Thorn and Kai were each standing on chairs and hanging a swath on the wall above the fireplace mantel as part of their makeshift altar.
What's going on? Cinder asked. What was that noise?
It's all under control,
said Thorn through a mouthful of tacks. She looked at Kai, who shrugged sheepishly.
We had a disagreement with the bookshelf, but Thorn's right. We've got this.
Cinder opened her mouth to demand more information, but hesitated and glanced around the room again. Nothing seemed irreparably damaged.
How much more time do you think we have? Kai asked.
Aiko is doing her hair right now. Maybe half an hour? He gave her a nod, and Cinder turned and rushed back up to the bedroom.
Nothing to worry about, she said as she let herself back in.
Aiko had almost finished with a complicated-looking braid that wrapped around Scarlet's head like a halo, leaving the bottom half of her hair loose and curly around her shoulders.
But what was it?
Asked Scarlet. Cinder gaped at her, scrolling quickly through a list of potential logical responses.
They knocked over a chair. When they were... wrestling.
She flinched on the inside, surprised that her internal lie detector didn't go off on herself. She could see the suspicion deepening in Scarlet's face, but she smiled and said,
That looks really great, Aiko.
I still need to touch up her natural curls, said Aiko, turning on the curling iron. And tuck some of these pearls into the braid.
Scarlet laughed.
This is just for practice, Aiko. Don't waste your time.
Aiko made a clicking sound in her throat,
akin to a subtle tisk.
How else are we going to get the full effect? Dress, shoes, hair, everything. It all has to work together.
Scarlet sighed.
You're all acting weird. Is there something going on that I should know about?
A chorus of highly incriminating no's and not at all's flurried around her. Scarlet scoffed.
Why don't you tell us about something old, said Cinder, sitting beside Winter.
Scarlet frowned.
Something old?
Yeah, Wolf had said something about a tradition.
Oh,
Scarlet fluffed her skirt, keeping out the wrinkles as much as she could.
There is an old, old wedding tradition in which the bride should wear something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. So for me, my dress is new.
She gestured at the dress.
The shoes are borrowed, and my something old is right over on that dresser.
She pointed. Cress turned and picked something small and shining off the top of the dresser. She held it toward Scarlet, who nodded before showing it to the others. It was a brooch. A yellow gemstone was at its center, set into a five-pointed star, with two golden wings stretching out to either side. Cinder's retina display recognized it almost immediately, informing her that it was a pilot pin from the European Federation military, circa 81 TE.
It was my grandmother's, said Scarlet, holding out her palm.
Cress set the pin into it.
It was given to her when she became a pilot. She gave it to me years ago, and I thought it would be like having a part of her with me. I thought I'd pin it to the bouquet or something.
Don't be silly.
Winter rose up onto her knees and scooted closer to Scarlet. Taking the brooch from her hands, she leaned forward and pinned it through the fabric of the white bodice, right over Scarlet's heart.
This is clearly where it belongs.
Scarlet was smiling as she looked down at the brooch.
You don't think it clashes with the outfit?
Oh, it definitely clashes,
Aiko said from behind her.
But do you care?
Asked Winter. Scarlet shook her head.
Not really.
I figured as much.
Done, Aiko leaned back. Get up and show everyone.
When did you become so bossy?
Scarlet said, chuckling, as she stood and straightened the dress. She gave a twirl, then stopped and let everyone admire Aiko's handiwork. Her hair fell in large, spiraling ringlets, still curly and wild, but neater than she usually wore it, and topped off with the elegant pearl-studded braid. She went to look at herself in the mirror. After a long, silent moment, she swallowed and placed a finger against her grandmother's brooch. She sniffed, then tilted her head way back and inhaled deeply in an attempt to keep tears from falling. After a second, she laughed again and lowered her head.
I wish she was here, she murmured,
and no one had to ask who she meant.
She would have loved him so much.
There was another sniff, and she turned around, swiping at her eyes.
She would have loved all of you, too. I think she was a little concerned that I never made very many friends.
She swept her arms in no particular direction.
And now look. I have so many friends, I need a cargo ship to keep you all in.
Winter stood and wrapped her arms around Scarlet's waist.
She's in the stars,
she whispered.
Jason and I saw her when we were in the sky, and she was smiling down at you, and so very, very proud.
Scarlet shook her head, even as she sank into the embrace.
I thought you weren't crazy anymore.
Winter grinned.
I never made any promises,
she said, lifting her chin high.
And I believe it, besides. She is watching you, Scar, and she is proud.
With a nod, Scarlet rubbed at her eyes one more time.
This is good, she said. It's better to get all of this out of the way so I'm not a mess during the actual wedding, right?
Cinder looked down, but she could still sense the awkward glances shared between Cress and Aiko before Cress cleared her throat and asked,
What about the something blue?
You didn't tell us what that was going to be.
Oh, that. Scarlet extricated herself from Winter's arms. I couldn't really think of anything, so I thought I'd skip that part. It's just a silly tradition anyway.
Winter jolted, her eyes gleaming.
It's not silly at all, and I know just the thing. Do you have any blue thread?
Scarlet peered at her uncertainly.
There's a sewing kit in the top drawer over there.
Winter hurried to the dresser, found the kit, and within moments had threaded a needle with cobalt blue thread.
Sit down again.
Now what are you doing?
Scarlet asked with some trepidation as Winter folded up the hem of her dress, revealing the silky lining underneath.
Don't worry, I've taught myself how to embroider years ago.
She lowered her head to concentrate, her thick spiral curls curtaining her face. Scarlet sighed but didn't argue.
How long is this going to take? Maybe someone should go tell Wolf to water the flower beds before it gets much later.
I'll go, said Cress. She was out of the room in a blink, shutting the door softly behind her. Apparently tired of avoiding wrinkles in the dress, Scarlet sighed and laid back on the bed, letting Winter do whatever she was doing to the lining. Cinder tried to peer over Winter's shoulder, but her hair blocked the needlework, so she gave up and joined Aiko on the bed, leaning against the headboard. She pulled up the comlink screen on her retina display and jotted off a quick message.